Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour editorial review. Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an education service of public interest under narrator George Orwell. The Law Hour and editorial review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on freedom when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage. The Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people, and the Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. Well, you know, I wish I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes and our politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, more gun control. But you and I haven't heard anything intelligent actually come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years now, have we? And that's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from the political process, not from the politicians, not from the lawyers or the bureaucrats. Now, old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me weigh in on that one and say, you give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either, because the real power in America is in our courts, not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into this power of the courts, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's a place to start. It's a place to begin. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. The place to start. Doesn't cost anything. Courtroom strategy and procedure. Our school isn't free. That costs something. And it's available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. You can click on the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Hey, last time we were talking about freedom and liberty. Freedom and liberty. People call here at the law school and they complain about the loss of their freedom, the loss of their liberty, and one thing and another. And oftentimes tell them, you didn't lose any freedoms or any liberties that weren't that you had that were available to you in 1787, unless you signed them away, gave them away, or threw them away, or abandoned them along the way, because government has not taken a single right, privilege, or immunity from any American between 1787 and 2007. Now, that's quite a statement, wouldn't you say? Let me repeat it, in case you weren't paying attention there. And listen to this. Freedom and liberty. You haven't lost any of it. It's all available. Every jot and tittle of the laws, rules, regulations, privileges, and immunities that you had available to you in 1787 are available to you in 2007, unless, of course, you threw it away, abandoned it, or gave your rights away in some form or fashion. In fact, boys and girls, government does not take your rights away from you. You have to surrender them. You have to get up in the morning. You couldn't waive one of your rights if you stayed in bed. You've got to get up. You've got to pick up a pen. You've got to go to some agency and sign your name to abandon, surrender, or waive any of your rights, privileges, and immunity. And that's what's happened. Let's try this one I mentioned last time called a license. Do you know what a license is? License. Everybody's got them. Well, I don't have any anymore, but I used to have a lot of licenses. I had a general contractor's license. I had a plumbing contractor's license. I had a boilermaker's license. I used to belong to a labor union. You know, I used to work for corporations. I had a social security number, driver's license, marriage license, birth certificate. And I suppose I probably had a bunch more that I can't think of right now off the top of my head. You know, I was pretty normal guy. I used to be normal until I turned into this right-wing, radical, lunatic, fringe fanatic, and I got rid of them all. Of course, today, you know, you say to somebody, I don't have a social security number. They look at you like, oh, my God, this guy must have mad cow disease, maybe something worse. But that's true. I used to have a social security number, and then I woke up one day, and I said, gee, I think I'll get rid of that. And here I am, you know, pushing 70, and I can't draw social security. Can you believe it? I was talking to a guy yesterday from South Dakota, and he's the same age as I am, and I said, I don't have a social security number, and the silence was deafening. I said, I don't draw social security benefits, and I'm pushing 70. I don't think he could believe his earballs. But I don't want to have my rights my liberties and my freedoms impaired by some bureaucrat in far, far places like Washington or Jefferson City, calling me on the phone and raising hell with me or doing something to me or threatening me in some way. I used to have that going on all the time. I woke up one day and said, I don't want more of that. I like this word liberty. Listen to this. It comes from Black's Law Dictionary. It says liberty, freedom, exemption from extraneous control. I like that. I want to be free from extraneous control. I don't like highway patrolmen butting into my life. I didn't like it when they were butting into my life. And now that I got them out of my life, I haven't even had a conversation with a highway patrolman for 10 years. Oh, I'll take that back. I'm lying to you again. I bought a house trailer not too long ago, and a guy happened to be a highway patrolman, and I had a little conversation with him. But I haven't had any real business transactions to make with highway patrolmen, building inspectors, plumbing inspectors. I build houses. I plumb them. But I don't deal with plumbing inspectors and building inspectors and the rest of them guys because I decided that wasn't very good for me. And so I just thought I'd share with you, you know, if you want to participate in trade, commerce, business, and industry and get a license, well, then you can expect regulation and control. In fact, the Supreme Court even made an observation one time concerning regulation and control that comes from regulated enterprises. But, you know, our subject matter is freedom, and people will call the law school and say, well, I'm losing my freedom, or the government's taking my freedom, and the government's doing this and that and another thing. No. That's not true. It may appear to be that way, but it's not actually the way the real world works. Now, sir, you had to go down and sign up for that license. In order to get that highway patrolman into your life, you had to go get a driver's license. I know you're going to say, well, but I can't drive without one. Well, okay. And there's other methodologies, you know, for getting around besides Greyhound and Amtrak and United Airlines and automobile. I mean, you know, there's other solutions out there. I avail myself of other solutions. And I get from here to there. You know, when I want to go to Reno, I go. When I want to go to Texas, I go. I'm not complaining about it. Doing my thing. Here's my point. If you want to be free, then you have to have liberty. And liberty, by definition, is exemption from extraneous control. The power of the will to follow the dictates of its unrestricted choice and then to direct the external acts of the individual without restraint, coercion, or control from other persons. That's what the definition of liberty is. Now, you know, we talk a lot about liberty in this country. We talk a lot about freedom. But my God, the power of your will to follow the dictates of its unrestricted choice and to direct the external acts of the individual without restraint, coercion, or control from other persons is practically unheard of in America. I say practically unheard of. There is some liberty and there is some freedom in this country, and I exercise it, and I'm just having a great time. And I thought, well, shucks, maybe I ought to share a little bit with you in the process. Now, a license has a definition. So you go to Bouvier, and we pick up the Bouvier Dictionary. What in the hell is a license? Everybody wants licenses. I remember when I turned 16, I couldn't wait to get my driver's license. You know, every 16-year-old kid. Just got to have that driver's license. And then, of course, you want to work someplace, you know, at McDonald's, and they say, well, you got to have a social security number. I got an 18-year-old girl up here with no social security number and no driver's license, and that girl is just living her life, having a great time. She exercises liberty and freedom. And that's because the very definition of a license, listen to this, a license is permission to do something that is illegal, unlawful, a tort, or a trespass. Boys and girls, everybody that possesses a license is a criminal by definition. You got a license in your pocket, you're a criminal. And that's because you want to commit a tort or trespass. And you got to have somebody's permission to do that. And so you're going to go to a qualified authority who can give you permission to do this tort or trespass against somebody else. You want to be a criminal. And the government, you know, state, federal, local, they are just lined up out here encouraging you. Come on in here and get this license. So you can go out here and commit torts and trespasses against people, and we'll protect you with the police power of the state. Whose law is it? Whose rights is it that you want to violate? Well, all of these licenses violate the law of God to some degree. I remember I showed you last time. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, he said, you practice my law to the exclusion of New York, Connecticut, and California. And he said, don't you add to this law and don't you diminish anything from it. And we Americans are out here just voting our hearts out to elect politicians to go to Washington and enact new laws to restrict our freedoms and liberties a little bit more. And then we go down and we get these licenses and permits so that we can go out and break these laws. For instance, you want welfare and food stamps? Well, if you want welfare and food stamps, you got to go and sign a contract with the state. And there's four statutes that prohibit you from signing contracts with foreign and alien gods. Four statutes tell you don't do that. Of course, that's just God talking. He don't know what the hell he's talking about. And so we got to fix these mistakes. But we got to have a marriage license. Not entirely clear what it is about this marriage license that does it. But I remember I was doing a marriage one time. It was a guy up in Iowa, and he wanted to get married to this woman. He didn't want to get a marriage license. And he couldn't find anybody to perform the ceremony. That's because all of the preachers are licensed by the state. And they can't perform marriages without a license. from the state. Well, it makes all the sense in the world. You know, makes all the sense in the world. A state of Iowa preacher would follow, obey, and encourage you to follow and obey the law of his God, Iowa. And I guess somebody that followed the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob would probably follow the Ten Commandments and the statutes, judgments, and commandments that Moses brought down off the mountain. I guess that's probably the way that would work. So, you know, it makes all the sense in the world when this guy wanted to get married, and he went out to the local Baptist preacher, and he said, hey, would you come do the ceremony? He said, well, have you got a license? And he said, no. He said, well, go get a license, and I'll perform the ceremony. And this guy said, no, I don't want to get a license. And the preacher said, well, no, I can't perform the ceremony. So he called on me. He said, hey, Gordon, could you do this ceremony? I said, yeah, sure. I'm not a licensed preacher. I could do it. So they had a pretty good-sized audience there that day. I think it was about 200 or 300 people. It was a big, big wedding. People from all, this young fellow was a farmer up there, you know. Hell, everybody in the community knew him. So when this guy got married, you know, everybody in the community showed up, you know. And they've all got wives, you know. So 150 farmers with 150 wives, and then they got a bunch of kids, you know. So they had a pretty good-sized auditorium there. And so as we were going through the ceremony, I pointed out that this young fellow and his bride had decided that they wanted a patriarchal marriage, that they did not want a state of Iowa marriage. They did not want a state marriage license. And so I pointed that out, and we were going through the process, and about 4 or 5 people got up and walked out. Not too many, but, you know, 4 or 5. And so I noted that as things were going on. And so after the ceremony and the cake was being eaten and the party was winding up and getting on, he pointed out, he said, oh, well, Mrs. So-and-so and her husband left, and Mr. So-and-so and his husband left, and so on. And I said, what seemed to be the problem? He said, well, when you mentioned that we didn't have a marriage license, they were so incensed that we were going to openly live in sin that they were offended and they left. And I said, you know, that's kind of strange. Now, these people were adults. They weren't kids. They were adults. And, you know, they were in their 40s or 50s or something like that. And I thought to myself, well, how ignorant are these people? Evidently, they don't know what marriage is. And so when you look up marriage, you know, just look up marriage in the statutes of Iowa, here's what it is. Marriage is an agreement with penetration. That's what creates marriage. You don't need a preacher to say any words, boys and girls, to have an agreement in penetration. Hell, you could do that on a desert island in the South Pacific all by yourselves. You don't have to have any angels or preachers or anybody. And so I figured that, you know, these two young people could probably accomplish that all by themselves. But they just wanted to make a public declaration and want to tell everybody in the community that they were going to live together as man and wife, and they had an agreement. But then, you know, Americans seem to be abysmally ignorant of law. I mean, we go to school and we learn how to lay the neighbor girl in the back of our Chevys and our pickups and all, but we don't learn much about marriage and marriage licenses and birth certificates and the legal consequences that come from them. We don't learn much about that. And then we complain when social lady comes by, knocks on the door, and wants to know, hey, your kid had a bruise on him today in school, so we're here to investigate that bruise, how to get it. What now would make social lady believe that if your kid had a bruise on him, that you beat him? You know, I used to be a little kid and I always had bruises on me. Sometimes it was granny or granddad whipping the hell out of me, but most of the time it was because I fell off of a stump or I was out playing doing something over here I probably shouldn't have been doing, and I got hurt and I had black eyes and one thing and another, but that wasn't caused by granny or granddad or mom and dad. But, you know, people, you know, they kind of take offense at that when social lady knocks on the door, but then they don't consider that they've got a marriage license and they got birth certificates and that the state owns their children. And I know, you know, when I say that, a lot of times people, they really get incensed, you know, when I say the state owns their children. Listen to this. One of my students went to school here one time, and this is back in the 1980s. In fact, it's dated 1986. Yeah, May 19th, 1986. On Monday, May 19th, 1986, this question was put to Mr. Jim Maddox, the Attorney General of the state of Texas. The question is, quote, is it true that the state of Texas owns our children? Here's Joe Sixpack, walks up to the Attorney General of Texas on May 19th, 1986, with, let me count the witnesses here. This is an affidavit, and I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 witnesses. 18 witnesses, along with this guy, 19 people total. Probably more than that. Someone probably didn't sign the affidavit, because the affidavit, as it's signed here, it's, I would imagine more people were there and some of them didn't go down to the notary. More than likely, they got in their cars and went home. But 19 people signed this. Here's what Maddox said. He said, yeah, it's true. And not only your children, but you too. This exchange took place in the Attorney General's office parking area at approximately 5:30 p.m., May 19th, 1986. The notary here is Gary Prentice. Can't read his middle name here. Gary Prentice. All right. I just thought I'd share that one with you. The Attorney General of Texas knows who owns your children. You want to know something else? You want to know something else? Listen to this. Remember I said, you know, in order for you to have your rights privileges and immunities suspended. In order for you to lose your freedom and your liberty, you got to get up in the morning and go do something. Well, the fellow by the name of Everett Sullivan, he was a Baptist pastor. He gained a lot of attention as the Nebraska preacher who went to jail rather than license his school. And in a recent talk to a Missouri congregation, I say recent here because it's dated 3, this is March of 83. Here's what he said in March of 1983, when this event was fresh on everybody's mind. He said, now many people have asked me, how did they get you in jail? Now let me say this, and it may shock you, but I personally was never charged with anything. And I've never been charged with breaking the law, and I've never been charged with committing a crime, and I've never had a trial. So you ask me again, how in the world did they get you in jail? Well, I may not know much about your church, and I may hit you here, but I'm finding that this is one of the things that God wants me to tell churches. And they sued the corporation. I don't know if your church is incorporated or not, but if it is, then you better listen up. When a church incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state. And the agents and the officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. Did you hear that, kids? Let me read it to you again. When a church incorporates, when anybody incorporates, it becomes a creature of the state, and its officers become agents of the state, and the agents and officers and the corporation have no constitutional rights. And by the way, if you take a license for anything, you lose your constitutional right for the thing you took the license out for. So anytime you go down and get a license, it could be a marriage license, you're waiving your constitutional rights to marriage. If you get a driver's license, you're waiving your constitutional rights to travel. If you get a business license, you're waiving your constitutional rights to property. I mean, it's just the way the law is set up, and I didn't make it that way, so don't get mad at me. I'm a reporter. I'm just here to report to you. That's the way the game is played. It's the way the thing works. And if you're saying, well, I didn't know that. That can't be true because I didn't learn it in my public school. Why in the hell would a master want to teach his slave the truth about slavery and freedom? I mentioned this to you last time. I think it was Upton Sinclair made this statement. If I'm wrong, send me an email and say, well, it was Joe Smedley said that. But some famous guy, I don't know who it was exactly, but he said that. A man, how did you word this? Now, I quoted it to you last time. Something to the effect that there's no man that is that can be more enslaved than a slave that believes he's free. I think that's the way it went. No man is more firmly enslaved than a slave who believes he's free. And I have people tell me that all the time, say, well, that can't be true. I never heard of that before. It's almost like if I haven't heard of it, it can't be true because I know everything. A famous man once was approached by a kid like that, and he said, well, I don't believe that's true. And this guy asked him this question. He said, well, do you know everything that there is to know in the whole world? And this kid said, no. And then he said, well, do you know half of everything that there is to know in the whole world? And the kid molded over a little bit, and he said, no. And he said, could it be that what I just told you is in that one half of everything that there is to know in the world that you haven't heard yet? Could that be? So this guy goes on for another shocker, and he says, now I'm going to give you a shocker here. This is Everett Sullivan. He says, I don't like to do these things because it makes me look ridiculous. But you see, we've learned some things. Now, for 6 years, we went down to the legislature, and we said to the legislature, give us some relief. Now, I'm glad tonight that I can stand here before you and say they didn't give us the relief. And I'm glad that they didn't because the Constitution says that it's an area that they shouldn't be involved in the first place. But as we testified before the committee, the parents would testify, and they'd weep, and they'd say, these are our little children, and God gave us these little children, and we're responsible for them. And they'd look across the table, you know, at the senators. And what in the hell are they doing down here at the legislature testifying before a subcommittee? They want a law passed. That's why you go into the legislature, so you can get laws enacted. You go testify before the committees and subcommittees to put your input into this proposed legislation that's pending before the committee. I've reported to you last time. You know, you've already got 2.5 million laws. And guys like Sullivan and me and everybody else is out here, you know, hammering on our legislators. We need a law. We need a law. We need more laws. Boys and girls, every time that the legislature enacts one of these new laws, it impairs your liberty or your freedom to some degree. You know, if you think about it for a minute, there was a time in America when you could drive your car without wearing a seatbelt. Did you know that? All you young people can't remember that. Hell, I can remember cars that didn't even have seatbelts in them. They didn't even put seatbelts in automobiles years ago. Did you know that? Much less buckle your seatbelt. Well, anyway, today, if you don't buckle your seatbelt, then, you know, Ranger Rick comes out here and he wants to stop you, get in your face, give you a ticket, and take some of your property away, money, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, inconvenience you on your trip, stir you up with a lot of hate and discontent for government and all the trappings that go with it because you're not wearing your seatbelt. Now, without the seatbelt law, you don't have that. But with the seatbelt law, you have this one more duty that you got to do. And then pretty soon you get another law that says, well, you got to buckle your baby in a special car seat in the back seat. Okay, well, there's another law that you got to contend with. And those were two laws that we didn't have to contend with. Now, somebody's going to write me a hate letter now and say, you dumb SO, don't you know that it's good for you to buckle your seatbelt? Hell, maybe it is. I don't deny that you people are all a lot smarter than I am, and you probably know better for me how I ought to live my life than I do. That's not the point here. The point is that every time you pass a law, you have some new restriction. You have some new restriction on your liberty. You have somebody who is interfering with your free will, your choice to make up your own mind as to whether you want to wear your seatbelt today or not. I'm of the opinion that we ought to leave people alone and let them decide for themselves whether they want to wear their seatbelts. Even though it isn't good for them, their decisions are probably bad, they're probably wrong and terrible, and they shouldn't make those bad decisions, and you and I ought to interfere in their lives and spoil their day, imposing upon them our will, our wisdom, our brilliance, our better way of life. But, you know, when we do that to others, then those others, they want to do that to us, and so we're all running around in the legislative halls screaming and yelling for new laws and more laws, and we got to have these new laws and better laws and upgraded laws, and pretty soon you get 2.5 million laws, and then you start writing letters to me and saying, oh my God, I'm from the People's Republic of California, and Governor Perry down in Texas wants me to vaccinate my kid, and I don't want to give my kid this vaccine. And they want to take away from me my right to choose. They're interfering with my liberty and my freedom. Hell, I told you, you got to get up in the morning to go down to the legislature like this guy Sullivan. These people got up, put on their clothes, ate their breakfast, brushed their teeth, combed their hair, got in the car and drove down to Lincoln to go testify to the committee to get these laws passed so that they could restrict their liberty, so they could write me a letter or call me on the phone and tell me I'm from the People's Republic of Nebraska. And they got all these rules and regulations and all these damn laws that are restricting my liberty. I don't know, kids. I think we're suffering from terminal insanity, but I'm quite sure. I got that way, but I'm pretty sure that that's certainly true. Americans are suffering from terminal legal insanity. Now listen to this. They're testifying before the senators in the committee. This is the Education Committee. And Senator Pfeiffer, spelled P-F-E-I-F-E-R, odd name, Senator Pfeiffer. He's a young man, about 38 years old, and he's an attorney and a legislator. He's on the subcommittee on education. So as the parents were testifying, Mr. Pfeiffer looked back across the table and said to this one young mother who had just completed her testimony, do you have a state marriage license? And she said, yes, I do. And he said, well, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? Let me read that to you again, kids. Here's a senator, 38 years old. He's a lawyer, a young fellow, 38 years old. He says, lady, hasn't anybody ever told you that a marriage license is a privilege from the state and that every child born to a family with a state marriage license is a ward of the state? Ladies and gentlemen, Governor Perry down in Texas is simply treating you Texans for what you are, wards of the state in a guardian ward relationship. The state owns your children, and the state, in their infinite wisdom, social ladies and politicians, God bless them all, believe that your daughters need this vaccine. I say, believe your daughters, because you believe these daughters are your daughters. They're not. You gave them to the state. Now somebody's going to say, when did I give my child to the state? When you signed the birth certificate. See, when you got the marriage license, you became a three-party limited general partnership, the state, the boy, and the girl. The state owned one-third of the child. Then you got a birth certificate and gave your two-thirds interest to the state. Now the state has a 100% interest in the child. You're the state's babysitter. This is why social lady comes out and takes your kid and places him in foster care. They're changing babysitters is what they're doing. Hey, we're at the halfway point here, boys and girls. Let me give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and we are open to individuals by prearrangement only. That's what makes us private. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. And the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, before we took our break here, I just told you about Jim Maddox, and then I told you about Governor, or not Governor, but Senator Pfeiffer, explaining the marriage license to you. All right, so now I've covered this little topic here of license. So if you've got a license in your pocket, don't complain about somebody coming into your business and raising hell with you. I'm going to tell you a story here. After I got out of the public business, see, I used to run a corporation called Atlantis Manufacturing Company, Inc., up in Boise, Idaho for many years. And one day I woke up and I said, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to quit doing this. And so it took me 3 years, but I closed that company out. And I spent a year sifting sand through my toes on the beach, wondering, well, now, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Because I was about 40 at the time. I thought, you know, hell, I might live to be 80, and I've lived half of my life, and I've got the other half to live, and so I got to figure out what I want to do with the other half of my life. And so while I was on the beach sifting sand and looking at the girls go by, I said, you know, I think I'll open a school, because some of my business associates and friends had asked me if I would teach them what I had learned at Atlantis in administrative law and so on. I didn't know a whole lot about law, but I knew a little bit. And so I opened a school called Barrister's Inn in November of 1981, as I recall. And I started teaching, in fact, two students, the very first students I had, the only two students I had, Claude Potts and Jim Hill, two students, open school and two students. Well, if I continued like that, I'd starve to death. But anyway, I opened up, and about 50 said they wanted to come, but only two actually showed up. And so we went to work, and we started discussing the law, and here's the way the law works. And what I'd learned at that point in time, that almost all of my problems were caused by me. You know, when OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and Rod Johnson and all these bureaucrats are coming into my company and raising hell with me, it was because I had gone down and invited them all in. I signed up. I got up early in the morning and ran down to these offices and signed these agreements with the sales tax people. And then the sales tax people came in, wanted to audit my books and raise hell with me. I went down and signed up and got a corporate charter with Pete Santarusa. And then I had agents of the government coming in and investigating my corporation and raising hell with me. And so in retrospect, you know, I went down and signed up for all of it. Anyway, one day I said, you know, I got to get out of this. So I did, and I opened the school called Barrister's Inn, and I was located in a private business. Now, I was in a public location. It used to be an insurance office, but I was in a private business, no signs, just like my school is today. You know, we tell you, you know, the law school is not open to the public. This school isn't open to the public. That's what makes it private. If it was open to the public, then it would be a public school. Then I'd be subject to regulation, and, you know, there'd be agents of the government knocking on my door, raising hell with me, like they were doing when I was running the corporation. So if I want to avoid that, then I got to run a private school. So that's what I'm telling you about here right now. It's privacy, private, Fourth and Fifth Amendment, private. Well, anyway, one day the fire inspector came in. And you could expect something like this, you know, things like that happen. But because on one side of me was a uniform store, and on the other side was a stereo store. And then in the middle, there's actually four stores here. I forget what the fourth one was. But here in the middle was my 2,500-foot insurance office. Now, there used to be an insurance company there, but, you know, they took their sign down, and there's no sign here at all. And so he came in, and in the reception office there were books on the wall, and there was a sofa, I remember, and a chair, kind of like a living room. I kind of decorated it like a living room. It wasn't a law school. It was my home. In fact, I'd opened it up. I rented this insurance office, and I moved my second home into this insurance office. So here I am with a residence located in a commercial district of Garden City, Idaho. And you could understand the fire inspector, you know, he's walking down the street looking for business. And so he goes into the uniform store and raises hell with them. And then he comes next door to me in what he thought was the insurance store to raise hell with me. And my secretary, Peggy, came in and said, the fire inspector's there. And I said, fire inspector? Is there a fire here in the house? No. So I went out and he said, well, I'm the fire inspector. He handed me his business card. He says, I'm here to inspect your fire extinguishers and smoke detectors. And then I started the conversation by saying to him, I said, who told you that I had any fire extinguishers or smoke detectors for you to investigate or to inspect? And he said, well, you have to have them. It's the law, you know. Now, in commercial establishments, it is true. There is a law that requires commercial businesses to have smoke detectors and fire extinguishers, but private residences don't. You know, the old story of man's house is his castle. And remember, the fire inspector here is operating under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. And your home isn't engaged in commerce, or at least the presumption is that it isn't. And remember, this is my home now. So I've got two homes in Boise. I've got one in Boise and one in Garden City. And my home in Garden City now is located in this commercial building, which had not been zoned, you know, commercial had not been zoned out of, I'll take that back, residential had not been zoned out of commercial, but commercial had been zoned out of residential. So you couldn't have a business up in Bellwood Estates, but you could certainly have your home down here on Chinon Boulevard. And so when he informed me of that, I said, well, sir, this is not a business. You're standing in my home, and right now you're in my living room. And while I'm pleased to have you come and visit in the future, if you would like to come and visit, would you please knock before you come in? He was kind of taken aback by that. And he said, why, this is the ABC or the Acme Insurance Agency, isn't it? And I said, no, sir. And he said, well, what kind of business are you running here? And I said, I'm not running any business at all. You're standing in my living room. This is my home. He was just dumbfounded. He said, but this is a commercial building. And I said, okay, I don't deny it. And, but you could rent a house for $400 a month, and this thing costs $1,200 a month. And I said, so I'm not very smart. So I'm a dummy. So I pay $1,200 a month so I can live across from the Outlaw and next door to the Raymond, to the Raymond Motel. But then, you know, that's my choice in life. And so he was kind of flabbergasted, and he said, well, and I invited him to leave. He'd stayed a little bit longer than I had intended. And I suggested that he leave, and I thanked him for his concern about my smoke detectors and fire extinguishers. And I assured him that if I ever got any smoke detectors or fire extinguishers, he would be the first fire inspector that I would call to have him inspect them. And so he left. But as he was leaving, he said, you better be in compliance with all of the laws. Now, what in the hell would make him think that I was in violation of some law? Well, he left. He never came back. And then I just tell you that little story here so that you can see that you know, a lot of times people say, well, you can't beat City Hall. Well, of course you can beat City Hall. But you have to be in compliance with all of the laws all of the time. I mean, you can't be running a commercial business without fire extinguishers and smoke detectors. I've never advocated that commercial businesses in Garden City, Idaho, operate without smoke detectors and fire extinguishers. If you're a commercial business in Garden City, Idaho, my God, one of the first things you want to do is rush out and get some smoke detectors and fire extinguishers so that you can be in compliance with all the laws. But those laws don't apply to residences. Now, I've said two or three times here that you got to get a license. Now, people that operate commercial businesses down on Chinon Boulevard in Garden City, Idaho, those people had to get up in the morning, run down to City Hall and get that license so that they could give the fire inspector and everybody else permission, authority, jurisdiction to come in there and raise hell with them. You know, if you stopped doing that, you wouldn't have near as much of this tyranny that you keep calling me about here at the law school, telling me I'm from the People's Republic of Idaho. Let me tell you a couple of little stories here about the Ten Commandments. We've got a commandment that says, thou shalt not steal. And that commandment is the basis of personal property rights. Without it, you can't own personal property. Not that Americans want to own any personal property anyway, and not that any Americans own any personal property. If there's any American that owns any personal property in the United States of America, I'd be surprised. Really surprised. Now, I know that there are some people here in the United States that may own some personal property. There may be. I'm not denying that, but I don't know of it. And the reason I say that is because nobody in this country, to my knowledge, practices thou shalt not steal. And because attendant to thou shalt not steal are some supporting statutes like you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And as far as I can tell, nearly all Americans run around with credit cards in their pockets, mortgages on their houses, Federal Reserve notes to conduct trade, commerce, business, and industry, affecting a public interest, with some kind of licenses in their pockets to go along with it. And so they practice theft constantly. Theft in America is a way of life. Theft in America is a part and parcel with the economy. Everybody practices theft. Well, I say everybody. I mean, there might be a handful of people in America, might be a handful of Americans for that matter, that don't practice theft. I don't know of any. It sure as hell ain't Don Uchman down the street or Everett Chisholm or any of my neighbors, you know, Smith over here or Evans. They all practice theft. They all practice that form of crime. And there's another one over here that says, thou shalt do no murder, or thou shalt not kill. That law that says thou shalt not kill guarantees your right to life. See, if you didn't have a law that said thou shalt not kill, then it wouldn't be wrong for me to come along and kill you because I don't like you, because you're ugly, or you're nasty, or you're rude, or you're obnoxious. And just for whatever reason, I'm just feeling mean today. I think I'll just whip out my .45, shoot you three times in the chest, and be done with you. Fortunately for you, there is a law that says thou shalt not kill. And fortunately for you, there's a law that says thou shalt not steal. And just in case you ever decide that you'd like to practice private property, you're at least now informed that there is a law that protects your life, your liberty, and your property. Now, our government came along, that is you and me, through our corporate institution, the United States of America, and we abolished thou shalt not steal with the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. We knew more than God. And we displayed and demonstrated our superior knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to the God of Abraham by establishing the Federal Reserve and the Internal Revenue Service and Title 26 and the income tax and Social Security and limited liability, and on it goes. You know, we humans, you know, God should thank his lucky stars that he's got us down here fixing all of his mistakes, correcting all of his dumb errors. But just in case, you know, just in case some of you come to the conclusion that, well, maybe God wasn't quite as dumb as we thought he was, and maybe insurance isn't quite as good as we think it was, and maybe Social Security is not the third rail of politics, and maybe there's something else out there besides Social Security. Let me suggest to you the Ten Commandments and these two laws that guarantee basic rights. And if you practice thou shalt not steal, God forbid that you do such a thing, but in case you ever decide to practice thou shalt not steal, and stop using Federal Reserve notes and credit cards, did you know that you could actually own some real property? You could have gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, and that you could use your gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil with the power of the will to follow the dictates of its unrestricted choice, direct the external acts of the individual without any restraint, coercion, or control from any other person. You could actually do that practicing the Ten Commandments. I don't know how in hell you're going to do that practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. I don't know of anybody that's doing it, anybody that is able to do it, or anybody that has done it in the past. There's always these restrictions. The highway patrolman is working under the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. The fire inspector is working under the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. The building inspector, the OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Social Security, the IRS, they're all working under the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. They're not working under the Ten Commandments. When we Americans practice the Ten Commandments, you know, before we had seat belts in our cars and child seats in our cars, before we had driver's licenses, children, do you know that in America, I'm going to tell you something really wild, in America, the United States of America, people actually left on long, long trips from St. Louis, Missouri, and they traveled all the way to the Willamette Valley in Oregon, all by themselves, without seat belts, driver's licenses, registration, proof of insurance, or inspection stickers on their Conestoga wagons. Did you know that? It was a wild and woolly time. Now, those people didn't have highway patrolmen stopping them somewhere in the middle of Nevada saying, where in the hell is your inspection sticker? Where's your registration? Why were you driving your wagon at more than 5 miles an hour? Don't you know that that's unsafe? And that I'm just here to protect the American people? You know, every time I hear Bush say that, I'm just here to protect the American people, I want to yell out, would you get the hell out of my face and go protect somebody else and leave me alone? But, you know, the guy's got it in his head that he just asked to protect me. I pointed this out to you in the last program or last week. You know, Osama bin Laden isn't threatening me. He's not putting fluoride in my drinking water. It's the government of the United States putting fluoride in my drinking water, a deadly toxic poison. Bin Laden isn't pasteurizing my milk and giving me heart disease and cancer. That's the United States of America doing that to me. Osama bin Laden is not spraying me with chemtrails. It's the United States of America that's doing that to me. Hell, the president, if he wanted to protect Americans and protect me, get rid of the fluoride, get rid of the pasteurized milk, and get rid of the chemtrails. That's the three biggest things you can do for me, Mr. President. God, I'd vote the straight Republican ticket in 08 if you'd do that. Let's get our act together. All right, so now this license then. I've explained this license, and it's attenuated with licentiousness. You know what licentious means? Yeah, here's licentious. Listen to this. If I can dig out license here again. That's liberty. Ah, shucks. Yeah, here's the pile over here. Yeah, limited. Here's license. Here's licentious. Listen to this. Licentious. Characterized by license. Lawless. Did you hear that? Characterized by license. You know, license is up here, and then the next word, license, and then it says licensee, and then it says licentiate. That's one who has a license to practice a profession. And there's licentious. Licentious, characterized by lawless, dissolute, libertine, lewd, unrestrained by the strict rules of correctness. And that's what Americans are. They're licentious. They have licenses. They love them. They want a license. They want a license so that they can do something that's illegal, unlawful, a tort, or trespass. I don't think they understand the definitions of these various words. I don't think Americans understand the definition of the word freedom or liberty or license or licentious. They call me on the telephone and they talk about the People's Republic of California, but when you ask them, do you have a driver's license? Yes. Do you have credit cards? Yes. Social Security number? Yes. And you're complaining about the loss of your liberty and your freedom? It would be about like some guy calling me up and saying, I'm in the Army and I'm really uptight about my drill sergeant searching my locker and ordering me around. And ordering me to salute him every time I walk past him. Did you sign an enlistment contract? Yes. Are you in the Army? Yes. Honest to God, do you believe you have rights, freedoms, privileges, and immunities? Yes. Have you been to public school? Yes. Well, that explains it. You know, if you've been to public school, you've probably been dumbed down. You probably are suffering from the public education system of America, which has not informed you of some basic understanding that you really need to have to function out here in the real world. That's probably what's happened to you. Well, it's what happened to me. I'm still recovering from public school. Hell, I'm pushing 70 years old, children, and I haven't totally recovered from my public school institutionalization to this day. I was institutionalized for 12 years. 12 years in a public institution. And then that puts scars on you, scars that you will carry for the rest of your life. I would never recommend for you budding young parents out there that you institutionalize your children. I would suggest you keep them at home, nurture them, teach them, you know, your values, and teach them your religion, teach them your political ideologies and so on. Don't send them off to teach them communism in public school and teach them all the licentious behaviors that go on and the filth and perversion and how to get your daughter knocked up, you know, in the ninth grade or something like that. I'd avoid that if I possibly could. Okay, now I've told you about liberty, licentiousness, told you about freedom, told you about licenses. All right, now looking back here on my list, I'm running out of time here. We're just about to the end of it. I'm going to circle off driver's license because I told you about that one. And I told you about liberty from Black's Law Dictionary and Webster's. And I didn't tell you about thou shalt not commit adultery. I'll save that one. The marriage license, I told you about that marriage license, didn't I, from Everett Sullivan. Then your business license, you know, you want to have a business license, I'll save that one and I'll talk about business licenses and adultery next time when we come back to talk about this thing of freedom and liberty and why it is you have so precious little of it. Let me put my papers over here and give you a friendly reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school offers a free four-hour introductory CD package. Now, to order yours, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Well, you could call us, too. You could go to 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Order it, and we'll send it to you. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.